The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
We're into the last hour of today's 9 till noon show, and I'm joined in studio now by none other than the presenter of the DL debate, Brendan Devaney. Good morning, Brendan.
Yes, Michaela, how are you keeping?
I'm good. What about yourself?
Aye, good, good.
Well, enjoying all the sunshine?
We had a wedding in Spain next at the weekend, so
lovely.
We were back pretty late last night. There was a... that lovely drive down from Dublin
It kills you off, doesn't it?
Yeah, I tell you what, I'll sleep well tonight anyway, whatever about last night.
Yeah, good, good. I'm sure it was well celebrated, was it?
Yeah, it was Colin Parkinson, actually. Phil, I do a bit of podcasting with, he would play a wee leash, and he does a smaller fish here. So me and him will be on. I know him for years, just from football back in the day, you know, so we've always kept in touch. And nice setting out there.
Good
but
stuff.
As you said, it's as nice here.
Yeah,
you know, so it's nice.
So
to
nice,
there.
So nice. But it's been a busy weekend on the GAA front, Brendan.
Yeah, busy weekend as ever. You know, some of the results, wee bit surprising. You know, you're trying to figure things out, like... we do prediction shows and that, and you can get them completely wrong, Michaela, because at the weekend there, a lot of people were looking probably Galway to win, and certainly Mayo to beat the likes of Cavan and that. So a few surprises in there, and I suppose interesting in a way, and it shows teams that you think maybe their season's going nowhere, then there's a bit of fight and back in there. So listen, keeping the sport more interesting, and of course we're building up to our neighbours coming to town at the weekend, the Tyrone, as you know well, our lovely neighbours.
Yeah. Is it in Donegal or Tyrone?
It's in Balfe.
Saturday evening. Very good. Yeah, that'll be a busy game, Balfe, when there's matches on.
But busy, sure, Michael, and be jammed. Well, huge interest in Donegal, particularly, you know, after another Ulster title, and probably this time last year, exact same scenario, Donegal Ulster champions, Tyrone came. And it was probably our best performance, I'd say, of the season, you know. So, yeah, it'll be jammed in Balfe.
But there's such a rivalry there that hopefully both teams will show their best, and it will be a great game, hopefully.
Yeah, well, listen, Tyrone, you know, very unlucky probably in terms of the season, like to go down, you know. There was nothing in the teams. And, of course, with Malachy O'Rourke in there, he is a guy, Michaela, that... everywhere he's went, there's been success, and it's often happened in every first year as well. So there's only one thing left to win now, and that's the big Sam. But listen, they were very unlucky to go down, and you know they had Armagh beaten in many ways in that game, and a lot of people's putting Armagh and Donegal on this pedestal. Galway were on it maybe before the weekend. Now a few people might have changed their mind. Of course, Kerry are on it. They had a decent victory, but not maybe the one we were expecting over Roscommon. So there's a lot of question marks about who is in that top grouping, but you'd say Tyrone are in there, and they've been sitting waiting on Donegal now, and I don't think it'll be the same type of game as we got this time last year.
But such an early stage in the competition, but obviously Donegal, I've seen the posters popping up already, people wishing them well, so obviously they'll be out gunning on Sunday.
Yeah, listen, the buzz there is unreal. You know, just Jim's tenure there, 6 years now, Michaela, in the most ultra competitive championship in the country, and we've only lost one game. And of course, he always just said, listen, that's my teams, we're all part of it. But listen, he is the ingredient that's in that, him and his backroom team again. And listen, there's so many tight games in that, a bit like last year, but we've still come out the right side of them. So there's just something about this Donegal team that there's that bit of magic and I suppose sense from supporters that we can beat anybody on any given day, and it's just a matter now of negotiating this tough group coming out of that. And then, you know, it's a long season. Like there's a lot of tough games, particularly because we had to go through the preliminary round in Ulster as well. So listen, it's some commitment from that group that's there now at the minute. But again, champions again, of course, the backstory of Michael Murphy and likes of first year
going
coming
the right
in
way.
That. So yeah, there's so many plus points there. Injury free is the big thing now, I think. Michael, you look at different teams around there. Listen, there's a few kind of, there's so many key players in Donegal. I mean, at the minute, really own bands. About the only person we're kind of waiting on now. So hopefully if we can keep all our main men injury free, that's a big thing.
And is it hard as a former player yourself at this stage to keep the head down, you know, following on from the success on the run that he's on?
Yeah, well, I suppose because of the GA way we are, we're just, everybody's in the community and it's not, you can't really avoid it. I don't think it bothered me too much because when I was playing, people talking to you about it as it is now, because you do love the game, and people are mean well.
It's that support, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe if they're giving after you.
If it was a bad game, you don't want to speak to them.
we had more tough times than these guys. But listen, it's all positive now. So listen, even seeing all the wee kids in that, the excitement around them, you know, and players, and even my own wee boys are up now, and like this fascination with getting jerseys signed and things like that. You know, it's almost like the excitement around that there and how they look up to the lads. It's a lovely thing.
Yeah. So I'm sure there'll be plenty of chat on that this evening coming up on the DL debate. So who's joining you this evening?
Tony Boyle, like, just talking about looking up to people, he would have been a hero of mine when I was a wee boy, and I ended up getting to play along with him. So times can move on, things like that can happen in sports. So yeah, Tony's on, of course, one of our heroes from 92. Rona McNamee, one of our Tyrone All-Ireland winners, Tyrone All-Ireland winners, I should say. He's on as well. Good friends with Rona, and lovely lads. So we're going to talk about the GAA from the weekend, of course, build up into this Tyrone match as well. Joe McBertie, who's a former coach, he's coached all over Ireland, and he's coached Donegal as well. He's on just to talk GAA now, the rules, and just his own story through it. And we'll have a few words from Mickey McCann, hurling boss, Donegal, funny stuff. Their campaign with a victory over Meath, which was a big victory. You know, we haven't been able to beat Meath the last few times, and this Donegal hurling is on up and up. McGill, it was a great way to finish the season with that victory. So we'll have a couple of words from Mickey McCann as well.
Great. And have you any predictions for this weekend?
Well, what are you thinking?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not going to put it out there.
Yeah.
I don't know. You'd be more clued in to me, than me, to be honest.
That's what I'm saying. At the weekend, I think a lot of people would have certainly said, because Dublin was a lot of question marks about Dublin, and Galway were at home. And again, after Mayo's performance against Galway, I kind of thought, is there something in Mayo and Cavan, who were absolutely terrible against Tyrone, turn around and beat them?
Just don't know.
So predictions, yeah. Listen, see what happens.
Well, I know who you'd be hoping for.
Well, Donegal's record at home, he'll probably, this is a difficult assignment for Tyrone. You know, there's like, Donegal just have been immense in Ballybofey. Now, I can't remember a few years back in a qualifier, Tyrone coming, and they're one of the few teams that have won this last 12 or 15 years at Ballybofey, and they certainly have the ability to do that. So it'll just be see how they recover from that defeat to Armagh. And listen, Donegal would be favourites going on to it, Michael, but certainly there'll not be a lot in it. I don't think it'll be like last year. It'll be a lot closer.
It'll be a good watch anyway.
Good watch.
And good listen.
Yes.
So anyway, we'll be listening from after the 7 o'clock news this evening, the DL debate with Brendan Devaney is on then. And it's also podcasted on highlandradio.com. We'll be back again shortly.
Highland Radio Time Checks, brought to you by Airgrid, the operator and developer of Ireland's electricity grid. Airgrid, powering up communities, powering up Ireland. The time is...
The time is 11:15. Now, we've been contacted by a listener who's looking to raise awareness about a scam. They say, my mother was almost scammed yesterday. She's an elderly, almost 89. She took a call from a Kevin Walker from the fraud team at Bank of Ireland, with whom she has her bank account. She told her that €1,100 had been taken from her account, but thankfully Maria had intercepted the fraud and had identified the monies were sent to a Robert in Bangladesh. Asked her if he was a relation, that the monies will be returned to Mom. They were on the phone to Mom for 2 hours. He was extremely nice, apparently. It was a three-way call, as Maria was also on the call. He was saying things such as, no one can afford to lose that amount of money. Everything is so expensive, ESB bills, living costs, etc. For someone who is generally so alert to these things, Mum was taken in. Maria was saying that she was afraid she would lose her job if the fraudsters realised that she was the one who identified the fraud. They told Mum that to get the money back from Bangladesh, it had to be done through Western Union. But the problem was that Western Union can only transfer funds in round sums. In this case, Bank of Ireland would be sending back €2,000 to Mum's account. So firstly, Mum had to send €700 to Bangladesh via Western Union. Bank of Ireland were giving her an extra €200 for the inconvenience, time spent on phone, etc. They warned her not to disclose this information to anyone, and that the closest place to get her Western Union was a Donegal post office. Her neighbour took her to the post office, as Mum doesn't drive. Kevin was on the phone all of this time. He told her to say to the post office that it was a personal transfer and not to disclose any details. He told her to go outside and said he would give her the details to fill in the Western Union form. He had also told her to bring her ID and proof of address to the post office for the transaction and she did all of this. The listener says, thankfully, the lady in the post office felt something wasn't right and told her that Western Union wasn't working. Kevin and Maria told her to go to another post office. Mum said she could get you a closer one more easily. It was on the way to it that her neighbour said that it didn't sound right and to call me, her daughter, which her friend did. I contacted Bank of Ireland fraud team immediately to ensure Mum's account had not been compromised, which it hadn't. Mum came very close to losing €700, but she was also totally stressed and shaking when I met her. Thankfully, she had only confirmed her name and address and telephone number on the phone and had not disclosed her bank details. I wanted to bring it to people's attention because there are so many people, and especially elderly people, who are living alone, and it's awful to think that these scammers are targeting them, putting them into a state of stress and fear, and will in many cases take their savings. I suppose it's so easy, as the listener mentioned there, especially elderly people falling into this trap. And when somebody mentions ESB bills and cost of living, those are issues that are constantly, like cost of living is constantly in the news and people pay ESB bills. So you can see how somebody can fall for that, but it is so important, especially relating to the transfer of money, to take all precautions. And if something doesn't seem right, just contact even a family member and get them to check it out for you if you're not sure. And you can never be too careful in relation to this. Now, today's Monday Focus is all about World Inflammatory Bowel Disease Day, which is today, May the 19th. Marking World IB Day, Crohn's and Colitis Ireland has published a new guide and talking to people with IBD. They will also host IBD 101 webinar and patient panel discussion this evening between half past six, and half past eight. I'm joined now by Alana McGrory, who is from Lahey. Good morning, Alana.
Morning, Michaela. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. So you were diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and this is the reason you're speaking out. Can you take us back to when you were diagnosed?
So I was diagnosed, it'll be 9 years now at the end of this month, in 2016. I was 17 at the time. So my diagnosis was, in terms of the grand scheme of things, a quick one. It took about 2 months to get diagnosed, but even through those 2 months, I was barely eating, couldn't keep food down, run into the toilet all the time, no energy, just nothing. I lost a stone in weight in about 6 weeks. That's about 6 kilos in 6 weeks, which is significant because I didn't have weight to lose. I was healthy enough prior to being sick anyway. Mm-hmm. So lots of trips up and down to Sligo Hospital and like the GP. It got to the point where, like, waiting lists or whatever, there was just one morning, Dad was like, okay, we'll go down to the Galway Clinic. He needs a private hospital down in Galway. And in through there immediately, I was scoped both ways. So both ways the next morning, and I did diagnosis, I think, 3 days after that. And I spent a week in hospital at the time. So that was my diagnosis. It was quick, very all over the place. Yeah. We didn't know what was going on for a bit of time. But once we had a diagnosis, it just, everything just fell into place. And it's like, okay, now we know what we're dealing with. That's the big thing, is getting the diagnosis.
And in terms of talking to people with IBD, do you feel at that stage, was there enough awareness, or did you feel, obviously getting a diagnosis like that is a huge thing and it has a huge impact on your life. Did you feel there was support there, or did you feel alone in that?
There was support. Like, Crohn's and Colitis Ireland provide a lot of support for like your initial stages. But I think more recently now that we have the support groups going, and like the online support groups are great recently. But back then, like, I got the diagnosis and the first thing Gastro asked me was like, oh, does anybody else in the family has it? And I'm like, no, I don't think so. But then 3 days later, one of my aunts said, oh, it should be three cousins in the UK that have that. Right. And then I think 2 or 3 years later, it was one of my older cousins, he was diagnosed. So it was just like, nobody ever spoke about it. Mm-hmm. And like, this is the whole point. Like, we need to speak about this. It's not just about going to the toilet. There's so much more mm-hmm. that affects people who have IBD, whether it be Crohn's or colitis. So yeah, it's a lot to deal with.
Yeah, like, and actually my husband actually has Crohn's disease as well. So I kind of know the impact that it has daily. But speaking there about, you know, whenever you said then that you had it, that your family members said, oh, we have three cousins or whatever. But that was kind of the case until I met my husband. I had never heard of it. And that's nearly 16 years ago. But since then, it does seem to be more common. And it's great that you can chat to people about it. And it's, you know, it makes it more normal, because it is normal. You can get on with your life with it.
Oh, you really can. So for myself, I take one injection every 8 weeks, and we just keep an eye on the bloods every 6 months, and I go about my life as normal. Mm-hmm. There is days that, you know, you do overexert yourself and you might be fatigued, like, for the next couple of days. Like, and I mean fatigue as in, like, sleep is not resolving. Yeah. You just have to let your body do its thing. Or, like, you might get a flare-up every now and again. Like, for mine, I'm lucky. My flare-ups, like, if I do get one, it'll only be 24 hours and it's dealt with. Some people could be in a flare for months, even years, and they can't figure out what medication or what diet is going to help them.
Yeah.
Because once you've met one person who has IBD, you've only met one person. Everybody is so different, because depending on what part of the gut's affected, and it's just... it's amazing how people can be so differently affected by one condition.
And I suppose the important thing is as well, if you, anybody out there that is experiencing any issues, that, you know, get checked out, because especially Crohn's, getting that tackled immediately is paramount in relation to getting it under control.
Absolutely. Like, I know people who, like, they were trying to figure out what it was, and then, you know, it got so bad, or they left it a bit too long, and the next thing, people end up in A&E and go for emergency surgery, and they've ended up immediately with a bowel resection or a stoma, which might have been avoided, like, pushed it further down the line, but they just end up that immediately, and that's a whole other challenge in itself. Mm-hmm. You know.
And how has it impacted, Alana, in terms of your diet? Have you had to change that much?
So I think my one's a bit quirky. I can't have any cocoa, so any chocolate was a no-go, which was very disappointing for me, because I was a huge chocoholic when I was a kid. I can't have beef or venison, mushrooms, and then others like sucralose, which is a common sweetener. I have to avoid it like the plague.
Right.
I could just... you can have, like, imagine small amounts, but if you ever have, like, regularly, you just know it's not going too long.
Yeah.
Not going to do the trick. So, like, all of those additives, like emulsifiers, all that kind of stuff, just, they don't do... it's fine for somebody who has a healthy gut to start with, but when your gut is not in great shape just at the beginning, it's just going to make it even worse.
And are you able to, say, have, as you mentioned there, like, not having excess amounts of it? So, say, I know with my husband, if he had one thing one day, he might be fine, but if he had it 2 days in a row, it would have the knock-on impact then.
Exactly.
And it's difficult when you're planning events or, say, you're going on holiday, things like that.
Yeah, well, I find it, like, all right at the minute, but I know there's some people who, like, are very restrictive. Like, they could be completely on the low-fibre diet, so they could be on, like, just plain white bread with a bit of butter, or... white rice, white pasta with a bit of sauce. Like, a lot of people in the initial stages can't handle their fruit or veg. I know personally myself, I can't handle raw fruit or raw veg. I have to cook it in some kind of way to kind of help start break down the fibre, and then let my body do the rest. But then there's the total opposite, where, like, a smoothie could just run through somebody because there's very little fibre in it. It's very complicated, I have to say.
And that's very difficult and very overwhelming when you're diagnosed initially, to try and combat that and figure out what you can and can't eat, because obviously they tell you stay away from this, but everybody is different.
Exactly. Like I said just there, I can't have beef, whereas I know somebody in Galway who just eat pure carnivore diet, don't do anything else, and they're perfectly fine with that, which is crazy. In my eyes.
Yeah.
There's lots of
trial and error. A listener said, if it's not too personal, what were the symptoms of Crohn's disease that you had?
So mine was kind of a bit iffy. So I had just come back from the fifth year school tour to Barcelona, and a few people had come back with food poisoning. And they thought, oh, Alana probably just has that as well. So mine was kind of food poisoning, so like running to the toilet, stomach just churning about, my stuff just didn't go away. Mm-hmm. So I had abdominal cramps, in the mornings, I would go to the toilet about 10 times in the first hour I'd wake up, and then I'd be fine for the rest of the day because everything had just got out. Once I was empty, I was fine. And then there'd be another hour like that probably later on in the evening. When I come home from school, the home at 4 o'clock, I sit down on the couch, have a snack or something, and I fall asleep about 6 o'clock because I was that tired and wrecked. Just, I had no energy. And the weight loss was the big one. Like, I didn't have the weight to lose. I was like the skin and bones, nearly skin and bones. It was just like, it was quite scary. So yeah, they were my big ones. What else? No, that was the big ones.
And I suppose you mentioned there earlier that people think that having Crohn's disease or colitis, you're constantly running to the toilet, but it is these different elements. It's the fatigue, the muscle pain, the pain in your bones. And even if you do get ill and you're in a flare-up, it's kind of one thing after another then that you can't get on top of anything, really.
No, you can't. So, like, I think most patients that we have, like, a set of tablets that we take when we think we're going to flare-up to try and stop it before it happens. It's crazy how people, like, it just gets so out of control so easily. Like, for me, I know I have my bones, like my knees and the joints and my wrists and my fingers would be, every now and then it wouldn't be the best. I can get bloodshot eyes is also one. I get bloodshot eyes quite often enough. And people's prescriptions kind of tend to change a wee bit faster, I think, as well. And a lot of people can get psoriasis along with it, so they have skin issues. So there's quite a lot. And we also be so careful with the sun.
Yes.
I know, particularly because of the medication I'm on. Like, these last few weeks, I've been SPF 50 all over, leggers, every day.
I know. And in terms of the medication, Alana, have you have you been on the same medication for some time now, or have you had to change it?
So in the beginning, I was on azathioprine. So that was the tablets. That was like kind of half my sixth year. And then to get me through to the end of leave insert, I went back onto my steroids and I started on Humira, the June of my leave insert. I was on that for 2.5 years. And then I switched over to Stelara because my body had made, you can make antibodies against biologic drug. So my body had made antibodies against Humira. So therefore it wouldn't work anymore. And now I've been on Stelara for 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 5 years. Sorry.
5 years flies. But it's amazing.
Yes, I've been on
biologic
for 5 years now.
Yeah, the advances in the medication as well. Because I remember my husband was on the one drug for years and years. Then it was changed during COVID. And then he was told he's immune to that now. So there's an additional 2 other options. Whereas in previous years, there was no other option other than the infusion he used to get. So it's, I suppose it's positive for anybody who does suffer with it that advances are being made.
It really is. And with my own experience working in clinical trials, like, there is a lot more drugs available, and there's currently, I think, across multiple different pharmaceutical companies, I think there's currently about 10 very good possibilities in the drug pipeline for Crohn's and colitis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very good at what's coming down the line.
And in your work now, are you focusing on medications for Crohn's and colitis, or is it a range of?
No, I'm in a range. So my portfolio that I'm currently on, but I'm in oncology and neuroscience, but the team in general that I work on, we cover immunology, which we Crohn's colitis is also covered in that, but we also have drugs for different conditions like Alzheimer's and breast cancer is what I'm on. So yeah, there's quite a few areas that we work on.
And in terms of Crohn's and colitis Ireland, how beneficial do you feel? I know with my husband, the newsletters and things like that are really helpful sometimes. Do you feel that it's an organisation that really does help you through the journey?
It does. Because once you're talking to someone who also has it, you don't have to explain yourself.
Yeah.
They know, or like they'll know most of it. And like, you just like, oh, how are we different? And then once you know the differences, then you can have a proper conversation. Like, you don't have to repeatedly be explaining like, what can happen if something went wrong. So like, you've got online support groups, the patient days, I've find are amazing because you have all your experts in as well as the vision panels in person. And like during those, you get a networking lunch. So you just be sitting at a table, like you might know any of these people, but by the time you leave and you have their phone number or you've their Instagram,
yeah,
and you're like, oh, sure, we'll meet up, you know.
Yeah, and they might have a tip that could help you. Everybody's learning in this.
Exactly, exactly. And because everybody's so different, like people know, like they might be picking up stuff along the way. Oh, that's a good like wee thing you could do for pain management, or you could do this for something else. So they're very helpful.
Yeah. Alana, thanks so much for joining us this morning to raise awareness. Good luck in all your work that you're doing and with your health as well into the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Michaela.
So that is Alana McGrory there. We were talking on World IBD Day. And just to remind you that Crohn's and Colitis Ireland is hosting an IBD 101 webinar this evening. And you can check that out on their website. That is from 6:30. Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. It's Michaela Clark in for Greg Hughes today. I'm joined now in studio by a couple of guests. They're from Encore in Strabane. And they're returning to the alley with one of Hans Christian Andersen's most beloved stories and the classic animated film Disney's Little Mermaid. Good morning to you all.
Morning.
So
morning.
Introduce you. We have Anna Gallagher's playing Ariel.
Hello.
And you're going to give us a wee tune later on.
Yes, I will indeed.
We have William McFadden, who's playing Ursula.
Yep.
And Andrea Logue playing Sebastian. And we also have Niamh is in studio as well.
Yes, she's here for the support, aren't you, Niamh?
Niamh's cheering us on today.
Yeah. Plenty of guests in here to give us an insight into what people can look forward to. So, Anna, you're not the star of the show, one of the stars of the show.
One of many.
Yeah, so how's rehearsals been going?
Yeah, it's been going really well. We've been rehearsing for about 15 weeks, which in the grand scheme of things is actually not that long. Yeah. And especially when it comes down to the
I'm sure whenever
time.
You're taking part, it doesn't seem that long to me.
Not at all.
Such a commitment.
Yeah. No, like I feel like it's just flown in and we've just had the best fun ever. The cast is such crack. But we just had a really, really hectic week there. We were lucky enough to be in the theatre the last couple of days, which isn't usually the case.
Okay.
Which has been a real privilege and a real help. So we met with our 13-piece orchestra during the week.
Right.
And that's really got us excited. So yeah, we're just buzzing to get going now.
And William, in terms of, say, the music, is it different to other musicals? Everybody kind of knows The Little Mermaid. So has it been fun? You kind of know the music beginning?
For sure. I think so. Like the iconic songs are still in the musical. So you've got Part of Your World, you've got Poor Unfortunate Souls, Under the Sea. But the musical, there's even, you know, added songs in. Right. So it's nearly like every character has their own song or a couple of songs that they feature on. But yeah, I love the music. It's probably the nicest music I've ever heard in a musical. Yeah. It's really gorgeous from, you know, start to finish. So
yeah,
love it.
And Andrea, in terms of, I've seen some photos on social media, the costumes and the makeup.
Yeah.
I've seen you with some of the hands.
I'm
surprised I'm not still painted red here today because it was in my hair. It was everywhere last night. So I'm lucky that I'm actually just back to my own original format. But I mean, it's just a spectacle. The colours, like we've only kind of started seeing everything come together in the last few days, as Anna said. But I mean, the colours of the ensemble, the fish, all our costumes were actually made by hand by Amy Carroll, who works in Derry, and everything is just made to, I mean, a fine art. We have eels who are coming on the stage and they have light up eyes. The set alone, who was made by Ian Thompson, and Rebecca Thompson's father actually helped along with that as well. Everything, even down to the lighting, it's just absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And the makeup, I mean, we're going to be in there for a while.
That's what I was going to ask. How long does that process take? Because each of you is quite... you're Ursula, William.
William could probably answer this better because William actually, after this, is going to be painted purple now for the rest of the evening. And he was just talking there about how he's not wiping it off for the rest of the week.
So it's kind of like a grease paint that's going on. And I was like, I'm going to be on it all week. You know, I'm not going to scrub too hard in the shower.
You'll leave the base there all week.
Aye, for sure.
So Anna, have you all been involved in productions before or is it your first time kind of all coming together?
No, well, Andrea and I have been involved in a couple of Encore productions. Most recently we did Nativity, Christmas Time, and we did Oliver, The Sound of Music. So we've been in a few. We've actually been in Encore since very young age. Yeah. We actually did our musical theatre classes there when we were in our teens and stuff. So, but this is our first show with William.
I'm the blue one. He's the blue one.
I actually remember you in Kinky Boots.
Oh, no way.
Unbelievable.
Oh, thank you very much.
It was amazing.
Thank you so much. This is my first encore show, but I'm absolutely loving it. I feel like this is a show that since the first night of auditions right through until now, it's just been like the best of crack the whole way through. I've really loved it.
And I suppose you're kind of living with each other for the 15 weeks, seeing each other all the time.
We're ready for it to be over.
The countdown's on. Well, you have a great night out, I'm sure, to celebrate at the end.
Absolutely.
So is there people from all right across Donegal, Strabane, Derry, all involved?
Yes. So there are people from all over.
I did the research this morning. So we've got Mumford, Derry, Yarton. We've got Letterkenny, Strabane, our King Triton's from Galway. Mm-hmm. Shout out, Mark.
Yeah.
It's really just everywhere.
Yeah.
All across the Northwest.
So, Anna, in terms of the show, what can people expect? Is it just sticking to the film as we've seen?
But there'll definitely be a few surprises too, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't think that anyone will expect some of the things that Rebecca has pulled out of the bag. She's just absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
She will be raging that I'm saying this. But it has to be
credit
said.
Credit where credit's due.
Yeah, she's an absolute powerhouse. Yeah. She's directing, choreographed and produced the show basically on her own, which is unheard of.
And I don't want to get it wrong either, but I don't even know the amount of children that we have on stage as well. Yeah. But like even that alone is like a mammoth of work to do. And the kids are absolutely amazing. The same with when we done Nativity the Musical, like they were the show. We were just kind of blow-ins, as you said. But the kids were amazing. And it's the same with this. They are absolutely brilliant. And they're more ready than we are. They know when they're coming on before we know when we're coming on. So I just want to give them a big shout out as well, because they're absolutely brilliant in the show.
So William, you start tomorrow night and run until, is it Saturday or Sunday?
We start tomorrow night and we're running right through until Saturday the 24th. So we've got two shows on the Saturday. The matinee is totally gone, but there are a handful of tickets left now for Saturday night's performance and Thursday night's performance, and then anybody who hasn't got tickets left should be able to get some for tomorrow. Tuesday, Thursday and Saturday evening we still have some tickets available.
Great, and I'm sure it will be sold out at the end. Yeah. We're going to get a sample now of what's to come. So Anna has very kindly volunteered to give us a tune. So Anna is playing Ariel in The Little Mermaid that is taking place in Strabane. Ready to go?
Yeah.
Perfect.
I just don't see how a world that makes such wonderful things could be so bad. Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat? Wouldn't you think my collection's complete? Wouldn't you think I'm the girl who has everything? Look at this trove, treasures untold. How many wonders can one cavern hold? Looking around here, you'd think, sure, she's got everything. I've got gadgets and gizmos aplenty. I've got who's its and what's its galore. You want thingamabobs? I've got 20. But who cares? No big deal. I want more. I want to be where the people are. I wanna see 'em dancing, walking around on those, what do you call 'em? Oh, feet. Flipping your fins, you don't get too far. Legs are required for jumping, dancing, strolling along down the, what's that word again? Street. Up where they walk, up where they run, up where they stay. Free, wish I could be part of that world. What would I give if I could live out of these waters? What would I pay to spend a day warm on the sand? they understand. Bet they don't reprimand their daughters. Bright young women, sick of swimming, ready to stand. And ready to know what the people know. Ask my questions and get some answers. What's a fire and why does it? What's the word? Burn. When's it my turn? Wouldn't I love to explore that shore up above? Out of the sea. Wish I could be part of that world.
Amazing. Unbelievable.
Thank you.
And I'm sure everybody is that level of talent. It is unbelievable.
It's not more.
It's kind of hard to follow,
it is,
isn't it?
It's hard to follow that one.
But I mean, Jared Bradley, who is our musical director, he has just really whipped us into shape over the last while. So a big shout out to him as well.
Because I suppose everybody kind of knows the songs, but singing them and learning, like, you know, it's while you're acting as well is very, very different.
It's so different. I think whenever you think about The Little Mermaid, it's hard to imagine it on stage because obviously everybody's supposed to be underwater and, you know, we're all meant to be fish or crabs or mermaids. So, it's just been so fun.
There's a lot of technical.
It's such a spectacle. Yeah. I think if you come and see the show, it's just amazing what you can make a stage look like and have it transformed it underwater. It's just amazing.
I always find that is mad when you do go to a show and seeing people's imagination, how they can take that story and transfer it to a stage where people are moving about and the audience is live sitting there. It's just fantastic.
We often talk about this, like how even Rebecca herself can just visually see something in her head and then put it onto a stage and we're like, oh, aye, that works. You know, whenever you're talking about it, you're like, oh, that's never going to work. And then you see it and it's like, wow, it's amazing.
Trust the process.
Yeah, for sure.
It's tale as old as time. People will come on Tuesday night and then it'll be all the talk and then
that's it.
Do you know, then there'll be no tickets left, so we would really, really appreciate
get your spoken quickly.
Absolutely.
So people can buy tickets on from the alley directly. Perfect. So that is The Little Mermaid from the 20th to the 24th of May in the Alley Theatre in Strabane. Good luck to you all, not that you need it at
thank
all
you so much
and enjoy every moment. Thank you so much for calling up.
Thanks for having me.
Highland Radio weather updates with McElhenney's. Get set for summer with all new arrivals dropping every week, from fashion to footwear and homeware to cosmetics. Discover more in-store or shop online at McElhenney's.com today.
Today's weather, patchy cloud will build through the day with the chance of a few isolated showers, cooler than of late with highest temperatures of 15 to 19 degrees. Now, history is set to be made today as our very own John Breslin is set to broadcast live from the top of Errigal Mountain. I hope we can cross over to him now. Good morning, John.
Are you ready for a link?
Yeah, sure.
He better be ready.
We can use our shirt and all.
Hello, John.
Hello. Oh, yeah, Michaela, sorry, I'm just getting set up here.
Yeah.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you there now perfectly. So the hard part's over, you're at the top of Errigal now.
Is it windy, Esther?
Part of the journey's over, all right. We made it up, and we're just getting sort of set up here and turning stuff on and trying to work out if everything's okay. But yeah, we made it up, and we're on kind of a... There are not many flat places up here, would be the best way of putting it, I suppose. So it's an unusual studio today.
Yeah, but it's a history in the making, John.
I would hope so. I haven't heard of anybody else doing a show from up here. I'd imagine that people have come up and done some recordings. In fact, somebody was telling me earlier on that they were up here once many, many years ago with the late Brendan Maxwell. And, Brendan would never be one to miss an opportunity. So I'd be very surprised if he didn't do some sort of, at the very least, recording up here. So I'd imagine there's others that did that. But to do a full show, Well, hopefully we are the first. I'm not sure. It's hard to verify these things, but we're here anyhow.
Definitely no mean feat.
We're determined. Yeah. But you have a good team. It's all about the
absolutely.
Help.
Well, you're sounding great anyway.
So yeah, we're good. Well, that's the first challenge overcome. Because we've got a few guests to talk to. They're going to make their way up actually, and one of them is from the Friends of Errigal. So I'll be asking them what's the chances of maybe putting in a chairlift or a walk a later or something like that maybe in the future. Make it a lot handier to get up here.
Yeah. So,
but the views, Michaela. Yeah. Have you ever been up?
No, I haven't. I fear that I wouldn't make it to the top.
Oh, well, you would. You just take your time, and it's brilliant because the views. I mean, just to say they're spectacular is an understatement, and the panorama, just the sheer expanse of it, looking all the way down to Dunfanaghy and out to Torry, and then you know the other way across to Truscott. It's incredible, and especially on a day like this because the sun's shining, and you can see for forever.
You couldn't have picked better weather to go up. Definitely.
Absolutely. So,
and how long did it take you getting up? We were kind of having that conversation earlier.
We took a few wee breaks. We didn't overdo it. We took our time coming up, and it took us about 70 minutes there, give or take.
Okay.
And there's kind of two peaks up here. There's a sort of a one man's path. Is this called Little Errigal? Anyhow, there's Little Errigal's on over, I'm being told. So there's sort of two peaks here, and there's a one man's path between them, and we came over to the farthest away one, and just to try to find a kind of a level spot to set up, you know. So we're here anyhow, and hopefully our signal will hold, and we'll do a bit of broadcasting from here. So it's I'll tell you what, I don't think there's a better view from any radio studio anywhere than we have today, that's for sure.
Absolutely. So you have a few guests. Who's joining you today?
Yeah, well, we have a few guests. As I said, we are going to be chatting to the Friends of Errigal, which is, you know, the people responsible for getting the path put in. Josephine Kelly's coming up for a chat. And then Emile Colin McGill-Aspig, who can see Errigal from his house and comes up here regularly. I'll be chatting to him. And David Leonard, who's the programme officer with the Wild Atlantic Way with Fáilte Ireland, he's going to have a chat with us just about what Errigal means in the overall tourism package in Donegal and for the Wild Atlantic Way, because we've met so many people today coming up behind us, and met people coming on the way down who've already been up this morning. So it's a huge attraction. When you know, we got here at like 10 o'clock and the car park was almost full, so it gives you an idea that just how popular it is. So we'll be chatting about what the mountain means, why it's such an iconic location, what it means to tourism overall, and how relatively easy or how accessible, I suppose, the mountain has become now since the path's gone in. So
yeah. Well, John, we'll let you get back to finishing the setup, and we'll be tuned in from 12.
Okay.
Listening to all the lovely voices.
Thanks, Michaela.
So that is John Brezen. He's set up at the top of Mount Errigal now, and make sure to tune in from 12 noon until 2:30 to hear all about Errigal. And what a great broadcast it'll be on a day like that in Donegal. A few of your comments just to finish. Fabulous voice, Anna Gallagher. Bravo to all the cast and crew of The Little Mermaid. Can't wait to see it. Love all your friends in the Galligan household. Yeah, that was brilliant. Just to be able to pop up and sing like that is unbelievable. And I'd say the production will be absolutely fabulous as well. I watched Eurovision on Saturday for my last time ever. I'd rather spend my time counting baked beans in a giant-sized Heinz tin than watch the show that it has become. That's coming from Jim. I had a wonderful experience in A&E yesterday. My husband had something stuck in his ear. There's a new system called Purple Pathway in place. A nurse specialist works in the area, now doc could do nothing. nothing for us, so we were sent to the hospital. We were dealing with a nurse specialist called Keir. He was absolutely phenomenal. He took out both domes, even though my husband insisted that only one ear was blocked. Kieran checked both. We had such a great experience. Kieran was so nice and so efficient. Well, that's it for the 9 till noon show for today. Greg is back with you tomorrow. Make sure to tune in to John Breslin, who's up next from the top of Mount Errigal. Thanks to Carling Orr and Shannon Wilkin for all the help on the show today. Good afternoon.